Blog Talk Radio.
We're all sick and wasted.
Good morning, good morning. Bobby Rodrigo. I take liberty with my coffee. I got to tell you, I am so disappointed in Blog Talk Radio this morning. Had to actually reboot the show and started a half hour late, but we're here. We are here. I take liberty with my coffee. Got a very important show for you this morning. Now, we at the coffee party, one of the things that we try and do is we continually try to educate the public about what is going on in the political process. The candidates, particularly candidates that are not being covered by mainstream media as much as they should be. And I say it that way, but what I really mean is that mainstream media should be covering all candidates, period. And that's an important subject all the time, because when you're not tied to big money the way certain candidates are, most candidates actually, on the two major parties, for example, or if you are more grassroots, or you don't have those established connections with media and with big money and the establishment of the party, they try to run over you like a freight train. Unfortunately, for them, and for us, they're not getting the true story out there when there are good candidates that are saying something. Now, we also, at the coffee party, don't endorse anybody, but I want to shine a light on as many candidates as we can. I mean, we invite everybody. You know, I have reached out to Rand Paul. We've already had Jill Stein on. I've reached out to Bernie Sanders. You know, coffee party media carries a big social media bat, which is where we are. So we're hoping that some of these people will respond. And those invitations go out to everybody. We'd like to have them on the show to talk about what it is they stand for and why they should be elected president. So we're going to do that again this morning, which is why this show is very important. There's a candidate running for president in the Democratic Party by the name of Robbie Wells. He is on a campaign tour. I believe part of the platform that he has is One Bus, if I'm not mistaken, and we'll let him talk about that. But I want to get right into the show, and I want to bring him on to talk to everybody, because we are starting a little bit late this morning, so I won't spend any time on current events. So I want everybody to welcome Robbie Wells to the show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you today?
Fantastic. How are you?
Doing just fine, thank you. It's truly a pleasure to be on the show this morning, to be able to speak with everyone listening about the platform that I have and my vision for the country in 2016 and beyond.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on the show. It was a little short notice for you, but it's fantastic when we can give more information about the election process to our listeners. I wish we could do it on a daily basis, considering what I see out there. I spent a little time looking at your website, and of course I want to get into a lot of things. Of course, we're involved in a lot of things, and if you're going to be commander in chief, you got to be in charge of a lot of things. But the first thing I want to get into is a little bit of your background. Tell everybody who you are, where you're from, and what made you to decide to run.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. My name is Robbie Wells. I am seeking the Democratic Party nomination in 2016 as a new breed Democrat. I call myself a new breed Democrat because I take the absolute best from the left wing and the right wing. My plan is called Eagle Nominee. I am in the South, just recently moved to the Atlanta, Georgia area from Charlotte, North Carolina. But I have been all over the South throughout my life, living in Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. Most of my professional career was as an educator and a coach on the collegiate level, then a CEO of an NCAA Division I team. I've been the CEO of a business in Charlotte, North Carolina, served the country briefly in the Army National Guard. And, you know, we've got a great plan, a plan with a centerpiece to bring millions of manufacturing jobs back to the United States that we have lost due to poor legislation that has caused massive outsourcing overseas, leaving millions of people unemployed still to this day. It's a plan that creates millions of jobs to improve our bridges and roads that have been crumbling for years, a plan that creates millions of jobs by seeing this country become energy independent, which gets us out of all the major conflicts we've been in for the past 25 years in the Middle East, and restoration of our educational system, which currently ranks 36th in the world. There's 35 countries ahead of us. We've got a plan that will go back and empower the teachers on the state level to teach the curriculum, number one. Number two, a plan that eliminates the $1.2 trillion in student loan debt and makes college education free all the way to a bachelor's degree. Because right now, we are the only Western industrialized nation that does not have free college education all the way to a bachelor's degree. That's a little bit about my plan and a little bit about me. As far as what made me decide to run, I've known since I was 8 years old, believe it or not. And that dream never went away. A lot of people have that dream, and then they just get busy with their career, and it goes away. But my father worked with one of our former presidents, and when I was 8 years old, my family friend became the president of the United States. And I said, you know what, one day I'd love to do that. So here I am many years later, and I'm pursuing that dream and that goal.
Well, that's wonderful. And it's certainly great when we are inspired as children. And it's such a good inspiration that it shines a light in our lives the entire time. So that's wonderful. I was listening to what you were saying with the Eagleonomics plan, and I've been reading up a little bit about what you have, and I certainly want to get into some of the nuts and bolts, because of course some of the items that you're saying, you already know when you're grabbing something good from the left and grabbing something good from the right, you get the pushbacks from the opposite direction all the time. And particularly when you're, you know, you have an approach that is unique without a doubt. You are saying right at the open that you want to grab what's best out of both parties. We know that that's not what's going on platform by any other candidate. There's no doubt about that. You mentioned, I guess we'll start with, you mentioned from an industrial standpoint, the manufacturing problems that we're having, where we're standing. One of the things that I talk about in on this issue is that when you mention outsourcing like you did, we have a world that offers literally slave labor to these large corporations. And one of the things I say is that it's going to be very hard to get those jobs back, regardless of tariffs, you know, the possibilities of tariffs and punishing organizations if they in fact do that, because they'll never be able to balance out their profit sheet the way that they are by using slave labor. I know that I know somebody personally that travels overseas to train people who working for his bank, and they're hiring people at a 50-to-2 rate. Two people in the United States' salary equals 50 people in the Philippines. And I wanted to get an idea of your thoughts on that and how you would try and solve that problem.
Well, we do have a structured solution that will solve that problem. Yeah, you're right. It's probably about 50-to-2. The only thing that we can offset it with is the simple fact our workers are probably about 50 times more productive over here in the United States. So it could even out if we can get ourselves on the equal playing field. It's equal because we can produce more because of the technology. Now, here's how we're going to do it. We're going to block a high percentage of imports. We're going to drive down the cost of manufacturing here in the United States, which is going to open the floodgate. Right now, China has a 17% value-added tax on anything coming into their country. We right. do not have a value-added tax, and we're one of the only countries that does not. Now, I do not want to tax the United States citizens any more than we've already been taxed, but we can put a tariff in place. So if China's got a 17% value-added tax, and we can tack on a 34% tariff on them to equal the playing field, which is exactly what I am going to propose to Congress. Now, here's the problem. Congress is probably not going to go along with it. Here's why. The special interest groups that are overseas with all of their operations going on over there, making cheap goods and selling them back to us, those special interest groups go back to these congressmen and they go back to all these other big names that are running for office, and they say, look, if you'll keep the same rules in play and keep selling out the American people, then we're going to fund your campaign. Now, that's called treason, in my humble opinion, and I believe that the American people need to be told the truth. So when I go to Congress, they're probably not going to want to go with this deal. That's fine. I've got a plan B. Plan B, we can still bring those jobs back, and here's how. Under the 1934 Reciprocal Trade Act, Congress actually gave the President of the United States the power to go back and renegotiate and negotiate trade agreements. So for the WTO, for NAFTA, and all these other trade agreements that aren't in the best interest of our economy, the TPP, we're going to get out of it. We're going to do what's in the best interest of the people of the United States, and we're going to put hardworking Americans back to work, and we're going to take care of us. Because if we don't take care of our backyard first, we're not going to have a backyard.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you touch on something that of course, is another platform of the Coffee Party, for example, is money in politics. Now, from the standpoint of what you're talking about, you're talking about the problems with what was created with Citizens United, but you're also talking about the back door, the lobbying door that has been open for such a long time that, for me, for example, I think impacts what happens in Congress more so on a daily basis than what happens in the election cycle. And I wanted to, when you talk about dealing with Congress, let's say, or when you mention the other candidates, what's your thoughts on how lobbying is structured right now when it comes to trying to battle and getting things passed in Congress if you became president?
Well, I find it very odd that a couple of years ago, law was passed that kept protesters at least, I believe, it was 100 yards away from any anyone that was being protected by Secret Service. I believe we need to have something very similar in place with Congress to keep these lobbyists away from our lawmakers. Now, as President of the United States, we all know the president can sign executive law through executive orders. So what if we had a president that actually put out an executive order that it was going to be against the law for these lobbyists to come at these lawmakers like they do, so that we can actually get back to representing the people of the United States instead of these big corporations?
It's a good thought because, you know, lobbying, of course, has been going on for forever. You know, that, that, yeah. that has always been a major influence. I tell people that Citizens United and the campaign debacle that we live in right now is just the front door, when the back door is, the money's been going in the back door for a long time. And then, of course, when you have all of these elected officials and their staff running the K Street, when they're done, you know, one of the biggest issues I had when President Obama became president, listening to the way he wanted to change things that were going on in the previous administration, was one of the first things he did was attempt to put Tom Daschle in his cabinet. And of course, the left went crazy going, okay, how is that change? When you're bringing in the K Street guy, who's the former elected official tied to big money, his wife is one of the biggest lobbyists in Washington to this day. And that seems to be the bigger revolving door problem in my mind. And when you're talking about prison industrial complex, military industrial complex, education industrial complex, pharmaceutical industrial complex, that's where all the problems are. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I would agree. Big money has caused a lot of the problems that we have right now because it doesn't truly represent the people. And for everybody out here listening right now, all these special interest groups have their claws so deep in most of my opponents that they're not going to be able to do the right thing because they're afraid they will not have the money anymore. They're right. But I'm here to tell everybody listening today, I have one special interest group. My special interest group is 330 million Americans, which means my special interest group for everybody out there listening includes you.
Yeah, and I heard you say that, and I thought that was a great way to approach society, because that is, we are feeling disconnected as voters. There's no doubt. I mean, in the last presidential election, 90 plus million voters who were registered did not participate in the election. When we got to the midterm, the number increased by another 30 million. I know in Georgia, where you now live, where I live, for example, the primary participation was 18% of Georgia registered voters. You know, I find that disconnect very disturbing, considering that the less people who vote, the easier it is for money to control what's going on. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. You go back to 2012, there was 92 million Americans that sat out the election. I truly believe they sat it out because they didn't have a candidate that they could identify with, whether it was Mitt Romney or President Obama. Well, those 92 right. million Americans, we're going to give you that option of a good candidate this time. And the reason I believe that I am the best candidate for those 92 million plus the other Americans that did vote is simply because, unlike most of these millionaires that run for president, I am just like 99.6% of our population that is considered to be middle class and below. I wake up every morning wondering how I'm going to provide for my family, feeling like my American dream has been thrown away in the garbage can and replaced with an economic nightmare. So I understand right. the problems, and who better to elect than somebody that's actually been there in the trenches with the American people.
Right. Okay, so I'm looking at one of the things I posted in the event page, for example, was the graph, or we'll call it the graph, that you provide on your website that discusses left-right government business. And right. I wanted to ask you certain things because, again, as I mentioned earlier, there's always pushback. So if we go into the left bubble, we'll call it a bubble. If we go into the left bubble, you have something that the left, of course, is screaming about and has been for a long time, is free health care insurance. And you mention it here, and one of the initial pushbacks you get from, say, the right or from the in-between, the liberty movement, is nothing is for free. So I wanted you to talk about how you would implement a free health care insurance program.
Well, absolutely. Right now, we don't have a very large tax base because we've lost all our jobs. But under my plan, by bringing all these jobs back, we're basically going to triple our tax base. By doing that, the Affordable Care Act, which has a lot of problems, we can take it on to the next level, which is free health care, a single payer, which I believe is where we need to go, because once again, just like education, we're the only Western industrialized nation that doesn't have free health care for our citizens. So we've got to do some things differently.
And then you move into the bubble on the right, for example, where you get pushback from the left on this particular issue, is when you're saying promote the free market business, which is the left, of course, is anti-capitalism. My issue with capitalism is I don't believe we have actually had capitalism really in our society. We've had cronyism, which is a completely different thing than just regular free market. And I wanted you to discuss how you would promote the free market business.
Well, we can't have truly a free market because of so much greed that is out there, and that's just human nature. We've got to just go ahead and admit it. So, you know, when you look at the problems that we've got to have a system in place that is, that gives everybody that opportunity to go out here without all the regulations per se. But at the same time, there needs to be some rules in place so that you don't have the Koch brothers, let's say, rising up, another set of Koch brothers rising up out of that. Everybody needs to have an equal chance.
Right, yeah. And of course, one of the things that I personally talk about a lot is corporate subsidies. When they talk about taxes and stuff, the first thing that I look at is the corporate subsidies myself. Why are they there? They don't need to be there. Just in Georgia, for example, where I work and where we both live, I can think of just tons of examples of corporate subsidies. I worked on the Kia project in West Point, Georgia. Horrible subsidy package that was put out by the former governor. You have what goes on with Walmart in all states, and we're not even talking federally here. We're just talking about within the states. The federal thing is even, you know, is added on top of that. And what's your stance on corporate subsidies?
Well, it's funny that you bring up Walmart. I've been talking about the problems that we have there where they'll take every one of their employees and pay them basically the least amount of money they possibly can at minimum wage. And then they put them through a training process showing them how they can get government assistance such as food stamps and
yes.
whatnot. Now here's what I think you deserve in a president. You deserve a president that's going to say, okay, Walmart, if that's what you want to do, that's great. But every 3 months, we're going to send you a bill. Okay?
Because that's the same
again?
Approach, for example, that would you have when you're chasing somebody who owes child support, for example, to the state.
Exactly.
It's kind of the same type of... Let me ask you this, because this is another pet peeve of mine, and I'd like to get your take on this. Where do you stand with corporate personhood?
Would say again, corporate personhood?
Corporate personhood, yes.
No, I believe that people are people that, you know, if you're talking about how they said that a corporation was a person, I don't believe that at all. So, you know,
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Because it's mind-boggling to me that they do that. That they have allowed
that's
that
right.
back to the Supreme Court. Yeah, one day said that corporations were people. I'm like, okay, when are they going to jail? I'm trying to figure out how they got a jail big enough where they could put some of these. You know, what happened in the last recession and all of these deals that the Department of Justice has been making with big money, with this, you know, the standpoint of fining them but not putting them the people in jail. Well, when are we just going to put the corporations in jail? Because that's what they did. They did something wrong. They were convicted. Their punishment is a fine. Well, let's throw the whole corporation in jail if they're people. And that's how ludicrous that is. I mean, obviously, you know, it doesn't work
well,
like that.
You know, you talk about our prison system. It's so funny. This past week, our President Obama started talking about the prison system and how we've got all these nonviolent offenders in prison, and we're wasting $80 billion a year something I've been talking about for several years now, and all of a sudden he's chiming in on my platform, talking about how we could take that money and pay for education all the way through college for every college student across this country. We could double the salaries for our teachers. This and it's almost like he's been reading up on my platform. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting because his priorities have changed. And, of course, we are talking about the end of his presidency, and his approach seems to be that there may be some good things he wants to do. He has been doing some decent things. I don't care what party you're with or what your ideology is. Some of the things he has been doing lately are good, but that doesn't make up for the debacle of the last 20 years, well, plus, when it comes to the holes that we've gone down.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I want to get into more of that. You mentioned the prison system, so let's jump outside of economics for a second, even though it's tied to it, definitely, when it comes to money. Let's talk about that for a second. A little word association for you. I'm going to ask you a question. Tell me what you feel about it. I'm going to ask you, give you a word. Tell me where you stand. Prohibition.
Prohibition. Decriminalization.
Wonderful. That you just grabbed a whole bunch of fans. I can tell you that right now.
can I expand on that real quick?
Please, absolutely.
Okay, very very similar to alcohol is what we need to do with the marijuana industry. You deserve a president that's going to push for decriminalization on the federal level. Right now, we waste about $30 billion in taxpayer money chasing down people that use marijuana and putting them in our prison system. Let's take that $30 billion and then let's regulate the industry and tax it and create another $30 billion, which is $60 billion. And then we're going to take that $60 billion and we're going to pay for college education all the way through to a bachelor's degree. Because right now, $60 billion is what it takes to educate our young people in college every year.
Yeah, you know, and that's another good way to tie that into. You know, the thing that gets me and a lot of the organizations that, you know, I've been arguing about marijuana for 40 years, along with so many other people, and you couldn't even get them to have a hearing on it in the federal circuit. They wouldn't even allow you to argue on it. It's so absurd. But the lunacy of marijuana being a Schedule I drug on the basis that it has no medicinal value, yet we've always known, since I've been a kid, that marijuana has medicinal value. And to me, the word treason, you mentioned that earlier, and I actually agreed on what you meant, but I don't try to use that word too much. You know, it's very specific as to what it is. But what has happened with the criminalization of marijuana and the lack of access to people who could use it medicinally is absurd by our federal government, by the DEA's stance, Department of Justice stance all these years, you mentioned the people going to prison, but we have lost our compassion as a government when it comes to making things available to our people. I mean, it's still illegal. It's still a Schedule I drug. And that's my thoughts on it. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, I completely agree. And it's time for our government to start realizing that, or the people that make up our government, to realize that none of them would have a job if it wasn't for the American citizen. In fact, on voting day, on election day, everyone in this country has the opportunity to be the CEO. Here's what I mean by that. When you go in that voting booth, you can be the boss, and you can do the hiring, and you can do the firing. So if there's some people that have been already elected, they're not doing their job, you can fire them. There's some people that you want to bring in there, you can hire them. And that's one thing we've got to do better as a nation, is realizing that the people truly hold the power. It's time for the people to rise up, which is my campaign slogan.
Yeah, you make a good point there, no doubt about it. And we do need to make our vote, we do need to go out there and change what's going on and help to make our vote matter more than it has been
lately. Absolutely. You mentioned in your government bubble, at the top of your graph here, you mentioned creating energy independence. I wanted to hear about that. That is another very important issue for both the left and the right, and you know, where we are standing with fossil fuels from a standpoint of health, from a standpoint of climate change, from a standpoint of independence from other nations. Give me your platform on that, please.
Well, we are no closer to being energy independent now than we were back in 1991 when the Gulf War began, the Desert Storm. We've got to do a better job of becoming energy independent. I've made this statement before. You know, back in the 60s, President Kennedy said that it was his goal that by the end of the decade, we would put a man on the moon, and we did it in 1969.
Right.
If we can put a man on the moon, then by the end of this decade, it is my goal that we will achieve 100% sustainable energy independence. Now, here's what I'm telling you right now. We're not going to be able to just wean ourselves or just go cold turkey and not use fossil fuels anymore. But we do have the technology in place where we don't have to use it. So we need to start weaning ourselves off of it and completely go to sustainable energy, which is going to be better for our environment. We all know that. We've only got one Earth. So, you know, I'm all about having a clean environment. But at the same time, I'm all about getting out of all these crazy conflicts we've been in the Middle East for the past 25 years, where one day somebody's our enemy, the next day they're our friend, and we're wanting to arm them. In fact, we have armed them. And then we turn around and they use those same weapons against us. So we've got to do a much better job and be a lot smarter in Washington in the decisions that we make.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about the connection there. And certainly I want to get into your foreign policy a little bit later as well, because, of course, what's going on in the Middle East and us in the military-industrial complex is a prominent on the minds of so many, pro and con. So looking at your business bubble, you have, for example, revenue neutral value added tax. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's basically the tariff system. It's not really going to hurt us at all, but it's going to block a high percentage of imports. It's going to drive down the cost of manufacturing in the United States, which is what's going to bring these jobs back. It's going to put us on an equal playing ground with China, with Germany, and all these other countries that have been able to undercut us for many years because of the bad legislation that caused the massive outsourcing. But we've got to reverse that. If you want more of the same, let me just say this. If you want more of the same, and you want to see more jobs go overseas and less people having work here in the United States, then go with one of my opponents. But if you're ready to bring prosperity, true prosperity, back to the United States, then I'm probably going to be your only candidate and your only choice.
Interesting. And so, okay, so moving, we'll go around the horn one more time, and then we can jump into some other subjects. So moving back to your left bubble, we have, let's see, industrial homestead program. Tell me about that.
Well, when we bring these jobs back, I've done a series on the top 10 most dangerous cities in the United States, such as Detroit, Flint, Birmingham, Newark, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, St. Louis, Oakland, Cleveland, and Chicago. Now, if you look at their murder... Oh, yeah. If you look at their murder rate and their unemployment rate, it goes hand in hand. Right now, in New Orleans, 52% of African-American males are out of work. You go up to Chicago, they've had 3,000 murders in the past 6 years. So it's time to make a change. The homestead, what I mean by that is, when we bring the industry back, we're going to put it right in those communities so we can get people off the streets. You want crime to go down, let's get people off the streets and back to work. We used to think that putting more police officers on the streets was going to deter crime. But what we have seen over the past few years is a complete mistrust between the people in the communities and the police officers. So instead of putting more police on the street, which back in the 90s we put 50,000 more on the street, let's get the people off the street and back to work. And we can do that by putting these plants right back in those communities.
Yeah, you know, and Detroit is a glaring example of exactly what you're talking about, as much as any other city, because we all know about Detroit. We all know, anybody who's been alive for the last 50 years knows the deal with why, you know, what happened to Detroit? You know, they used to make all the cars. Now it's just the city's bankrupt. What has happened to Detroit should be a glaring example of that. And bringing manufacturing jobs into the inner city is a great idea, I think, personally. On the right hand side.
Well, thank you. But can I say one more thing to that real quick?
Yeah, please.
I was in Flint, Michigan just last month. And Flint, Michigan lost 80,000 jobs through the auto industry when everything started going to Mexico. So I've seen firsthand in Flint, Michigan, which is much smaller, of course, than Detroit, but still, Flint, Pontiac, Detroit, they were all just devastated by what occurred. It was when you go through and you see old plant sites that are miles and miles long, and you realize that 80,000 jobs were shut down there, you realize that's criminal, and that's un-American to think that we would put a system in place, or not we, but our lawmakers would put a system in place. And I believe that it is time for leadership to step forward that is going to say enough is enough. That's what I'm doing.
So going into the right bubble, one of the issues that you have here that I know the Liberty Movement loves, for example, and you know, I say it that way because there are people in the Liberty Movement that say that it's the facts of the right. I'm in the Liberty Movement and I'm not in the right. I hate that. I hate labels anyway, but you mentioned something that's, I think, a very important issue, and that is to curtail the Federal Reserve. And I'm anxious to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, the Federal Reserve, I would like to see it get back to what the Constitution says, where our Congress has the sovereign power over our money system, you know, and not just one private banking entity, which has caused a lot of problems for us. It's obvious that the Federal Reserve has caused an awful lot of problems, devaluing the face of the dollar by over 95% in the last 102 years now, since everything went down in Jekyll Island. And for those of you out here listening, there's a great book out there. The Creature from Jekyll Island gives you an in-depth detail of what actually happened with the formation of the Federal Reserve. So we need to move in a different direction, and we need to put it back in the hands of Congress, which is where it should be anyway, because Congress is supposed to have the best interests of the people at heart.
That is correct. And I'm applauding that statement loudly for myself. It is absolutely, personally speaking, I absolutely agree. The devaluing of the dollar is absolutely the result of the Federal Reserve and the corruption of the private banking system. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, even if you look at it historically with the recessions in the 20s and now what we just went through, it was all about the banking issue and the value of the dollar and how it was insane. I'm sitting there watching it going, but meanwhile, everybody's got their hand in the till and still making all the money they want to. But you and I in the middle class are looking, like you say, waking up each day and going, okay, how am I providing for my family today? That's not how we should be living. And the Federal Reserve is absolutely unconstitutional, I agree. And I'm glad to hear you say that, actually.
I am definitely a constitutional guy.
I'm glad to hear that because, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, that, well, my biggest issue with what's going on with our government from a constitutional standpoint is I'd like them to start following it. Let's take it out for a spin and see if it works, because I'll be damned if they want to follow it, because they don't want to follow it. You know, every single day, the actions of Congress and our president are just so, and this has been going on, you know, so it's just like, it's a blur. You know, you start way back here. I became an activist because of St. Reagan, and I just have been watching all of these actions going on, and all the, you know, Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush and Obama, and I'm like, oh my God, will you stop and just take a break, and let's just take that Constitution around. Give me a month. I'll take a month at this point. And let's see if it actually works, because there's a pushback coming from different sides saying, well, the Constitution is no longer useful and we need to change it. Let's do an amendment. Let's have an Article 5 convention. And I just want to shake everybody going, if we aren't following it now, how are we going to follow it when we change it? What difference does it make? It's not the problem. And you know, and that's how I see it personally. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, you're right, which is why we do need to get back to it. We've gotten so far away from the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And, you know, let's just get real simple with it. I was a coach for a number of years, and whenever we were in a contest and we didn't do very well, we always said, you know what, we're going to get back to the basics. We're going to cut out all this frills, but we're going to get back to the meat and the potatoes of it. And that's what we need to do as a country, is get back to the meat and potatoes of doing what our founding fathers put in place for us many years ago.
I couldn't agree more. For me, you know, after we do that and we see how it works, then maybe we could talk about, well, maybe we need to tweak it here or there. I get that society is different, but I, you know, when you can just blindly, like, for example, throw out the Fourth Amendment or write a law in Congress and have it signed by the president, two branches of the government, and it's like the NDAA, the indefinite detention provision of the NDAA, and I'm just, oh my God, what are they doing? And oh, the Patriot Act, you know, and let's just throw, we don't need the first, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the, you know, oh, really, guys? And just in one law, they just do that. And we just go right along with it, and the media just, yeah, great, let's do patriotism and support our troops, and then we get snowed right into it as society. And it's driving me crazy. Can you stop it for me, Robbie?
Well, we're going to do everything in our power to. Absolutely.
All right, so going out of the bubble now, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of other things. You mentioned the prison system, and I wanted to get your take on privatization of prisons and probation departments. We deal with that a lot here in Georgia, for example. There's a couple of class action lawsuits that are going on in the state against some of the actions of these private probation departments. And I just wanted to get your take on that.
Well, it shouldn't occur. We shouldn't have private profiteering off of our prison system, because all they're going to do is try to put more and more people in prison because they make more money when they do. It's criminal within itself. The system within itself is criminal. And it needs to be overhauled and it needs to be changed.
I find it interesting, for example, myself, when you talk about privatization and profit, now free market, capitalism, all those things, how is owning a prison and getting paid for it by my tax dollars a free market system?
It's not.
And yet it's pushed, particularly from the right, and when you talk about ideologies, that this is a better way to go, more efficient stuff. How can that be? And then, of course, when they take the money and run, as has happened since this model has come on, the taxpayers then have to foot the bill to fix it. And on top of that,
well,
if they're not treating their prisoners constitutionally, we have another issue.
Well, it's basically the same thing as those that profit off of war. I mean, if you look at our former vice president,
right.
Let's just get real. Let's just get real with Halliburton, okay? Our former vice president made a ton of money off of us being in war in Iraq and Afghanistan. and our former president probably took some really, really bad advice from our former vice president. And I'm probably one of the only ones that's willing to, hey, I'm going to call it like it is. And who's left to fix the mess? The American people are. And it shouldn't be that way.
Well, you know, absolutely. And the thing about the military-industrial complex, I mean, obviously we all know about the predictions of Dwight D. Eisenhower on this in this issue. But when you talk about somebody like Cheney or Rumsfeld or Gates, these people have been around for a long time. They didn't just pop up under W's. I'm a nickname guy, if you haven't noticed. Under W's presidency, they didn't just show up all of a sudden. These guys have been around doing things for a long time. You know, Cheney was the CEO of, you know, different parts. As a matter of fact, there was there's a report about the one of the corporations that was involved in one of the African countries. I want to say Nigeria, but I'm not looking at the article. But Cheney was all involved in that corruption that came about, that went through Europe, that there were jurisdictional questions on the sauce. But these people, you know, when President Obama kept Robert Gates as the Secretary of Defense, I just threw my hands up in the air. You know, I mentioned Daschle earlier, but Gates has been around, and, you know, from my standpoint, Gates is just a criminal. You know, I'm a veteran, and the things that I have seen these people do have just driven me back. You know, when you talk about the war, you know, war profiteering and going to war just for the purposes of making money, because I don't know what the hell other reason why we were doing it. It certainly wasn't the Declaration of Congress. And, you know, and you have these guys doing this, and then I see their actions within the war, you know, like General McChrystal that Jeremy Scahill mentioned throughout his Dirty Wars book and things like that. These are serious things, and we wonder why we're hated in certain parts of the world where these things are happening. Now, I want to get your take on all of that.
Well, it's funny that you say that. You know, our current Secretary of State, he wants to broker for peace with Israel and Palestine. Who are we to tell anyone to have a ceasefire and let's have peace when we've been in constant conflict ourselves in the same region? It's about time that if we're really going to start brokering for peace, that we start putting our money where our mouth is. Because right now, when we say that, the people around the world are laughing, saying, how in the world can the United States talk about peace?
And they're true. Right. You know, there's 134 conflicts we're involved with right now today. At least that's what it was last week. I don't count them every day. It's kind of really mind-boggling. But our foreign policy for a long time has been, I don't even know where it's coming from anymore, other than that's making a lot of people money. You know, they talk about, I had a discussion on a show here recently about Afghanistan, and it was pointed out to me that Afghanistan has never been conquered in the history of the world. And, you know, I get that, and it's absolutely accurate, but there's never been a country with our might rolling through Afghanistan ever in the history of the world either. And yet, we've got all our tanks sitting in Arizona somewhere. We're fighting in Humvees for 14 years with people who have peace shooters that live in caves against us, and with no air support or anything. It's ludicrous to me. The way that the entire approach is to that conflict, for example, from a military standpoint, just from a military standpoint, where it's almost going back to like Korea, let's fight up to a line. And people forget about this. In Korea, we fought up to a line and then we had to go back. And then we would fight up to a line and we had to go back. And that's what Afghanistan reminds me of, and why foreign policy in this country drives me crazy. And what's your take on that?
Well, you're exactly right. And, you know, if we're going to go to war, let's get Congress to actually vote on it. They haven't actually declared war since World War II.
That's right.
That's number one. It's true. So let's get them to actually declare war. And then when we do go to war, Let's give the Joint Chiefs and our military everything they need in order to not only remain the greatest military force on the face of this planet, but everything they need in order to win, and to win decisively, and to win quickly.
But tell me now, and I totally agree with that from a military standpoint, absolutely. But the first thing I want to do is not go to war at all, of course. I'm a big proponent
That's right.
of peace
exactly.
and diplomacy.
I am
tell
too.
Tell me your
I
thoughts
too.
On that. Yeah.
Well, war is an option, but it should always be the absolute last option. People die, okay? And not just
yeah.
the military personnel, but their families and their friends, a piece of their heart dies too. You deserve someone that actually understands that. So war should be an option, but it should be the absolute last option. But there are two things that deter war, and that is a very strong economy and a very strong military, which is why, as President of the United States, I'm going to give the Joint Chiefs whatever they need in order to keep us as the most powerful military force on the face of this planet.
Fantastic. So moving on to other areas, back to a little bit of word association. We talked about marijuana, for example. Let's put that aside.
Sure.
The next word association is hemp.
Legalized.
Isn't it ludicrous that we have a product that can be used with 25,000 different items, and we're not allowed to grow it or use it for manufacturing in this country, considering especially that it takes care of plastics and biofuels and a whole bunch of different medicinal products, over-the-counter things, food, et cetera. We're not even allowed to do it in this country. I'm amazed.
President George H.W. Bush pushed for it to be illegal. But yet it was he that was saved by hemp rope when he had to bail out of his fighter jet when he had been shot down. So, you
Isn't
know.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is amazing. I don't know if you knew that, but it's the truth.
I did. And I'm glad you said that, because I haven't thought about that story in a long time, but that's one of the stories that goes around in the hemp activist world.
Well, and what people don't realize is that hemp was actually, at one time, it was mandatory for farmers to grow it when
yeah.
we were in World War II, for example. You know, and its use in...
That was one of the biggest uses that it had between the ships and the planes and the parachutes. Anything that had line, they were using hemp, as you mentioned.
That's right.
It is absolutely amazing. I had forgotten that story. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is one of those irony things that happened. It reminds me of when you talk about clean energy. When President Carter, one of the things that President Carter did that I loved was he put solar panels on the White House. And the first thing that St. Reagan did was come and remove them. And it reminded me, somebody had said something I had heard somebody in the, I think it was in the news back then, and they said, you know, it's almost like we have the mentality, we have a selfish mentality. It's like, oh, I don't need that because we're in the United States and we don't need to worry about solar power. And that's the kind of message I got from that, instead of seeing it, because really, why would you take them down? I mean, what is the logic there other than to devalue it? And why would you devalue solar power ever? I mean, it's been around for so long. It should be so much more integrated in our society, in my opinion. And what do you think about that?
No, I completely agree. You know, solar, wind, even down to... the fact that we've got the technology to harness the energy from the ocean waves now, and we need to start moving to that quickly.
Yeah, I actually put a video of that on my website about 3 weeks ago or so. They one of the networks that was covering that actually put out a very a new and very informative way that I believe the buoy was off of the coast of Hawaii, I want to say. And they were showing how they were running the test from the buoy, creating the energy, and how they tied it into the grid so they could, you know, run the test and see how well it works and how many they would need and stuff like that. It was a very wonderful thing to see, of course, and simple. And here we have energy coming from the ocean, which only covers, I'm sorry, 2/3 of the Earth, or is it 3/4? Kind of
it's,
a lot
it's
of power.
3/4.
Out there
it's 75%. 75% of the world is water. Yeah.
And meanwhile, we're trying to destroy it by other ways. They just, you know, your thoughts on the drilling system that just left Seattle and arrived in the Arctic Ocean. I posted an article about it, I believe, yesterday or the day before yesterday, about President Obama had granted the permits for the drilling off the Arctic Alaska with conditions, you know, safety conditions, fantastic, right? But I wanted to get your thoughts on that. There was a big protest involved with that. Shell owns it, and it was sitting in the Puget Sound for a while. And what's your thoughts on it?
Well, again, I'd like to see us become sustainable, energy independent, and get away from the fossil fuels. We're not there yet, but we definitely need to be taking actions to move in that direction. And again, if we can put a man on the moon, we can realize sustainable energy independence, and we can do it very quickly. But we've got to get serious about it, and we've got to tell the corporations, these big corporations, you know, sorry, but we're moving in another direction. It's about like the WTO, okay? Sorry, we're going to move in another direction, guys. We're going to take care of the people of the United States first. We're going to get back to being a production-based nation instead of a consumption-based nation. Because when we were back and we were producing and we were selling, that's when this economy thrived. But now all we're doing is buying and consuming, and we're going broke. In fact, we're, what, going on $19 trillion right now? That means we're broke.
Yeah.
So let's just keep it real.
Yeah, it does, and there hasn't been any conversations about that in a while, you know, and it's people's worrying about surviving every day, like you say. I was thinking about something. Tell me about your thoughts about the way states are creating right-to-work laws, breaking up unions, and in my thought of it constitutionally is that I think that the government should be out of the union and the right-to-work legislation and let the market decide. If I want to join a union, I should have the right. If I don't, I should have the right. But right now, we have, and a lot of it had to do with corruption. Unions were corrupt now, and corporations have always been corrupt. So you've got, you know, looks like the corporations are making headway and doing right to work legislation to break up the unions and hurt the middle class. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you're exactly right. We need to let the unions be strong, because that's when our unions were strong, our economy was strong. All you have to do is go back and look at the history of this country. And here's the thing: history will repeat itself if we will put an environment in place where history can repeat itself. Now, if what was going on was good, now if what was going on was bad, then we need to apply what we've learned. But I truly believe that our economy would do much better with strong unions across this country. Now, again, we don't want a corrupt system with our unions.
Right.
But we do want to, you know, let everybody have their choice if they want to be a part. But who wouldn't want to be a part of a system that basically goes in and works for you to make sure you get better wages and you get better benefits?
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I am, you know, I don't like it when they're using the, you know, their hammer to do that. There's a comment in my chat room from a gentleman who's part of the Coffee Party regular, and he says, I'm all for this idea of getting back to a producer-based nation. But how do you do that without massive government intervention? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you're going to have government intervention. And it's okay to have government intervention to fix the mess that we've been put into. You can't just say, okay, the government got us in this mess, now let the government just get out of the way. It's not going to happen. So you're going to have to
Right.
have to put some laws in place and some rules in place that's going to actually right the wrongs, per se, that have occurred over the past few decades.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that I struggle with all the time is there's no question that, well, if we're gonna, you know, it's the old two wrongs to make a right, don't make a right thing. But sometimes you've got to create a balance to protect society. And that's really
yep.
where we are, because we are out of balance when it comes to protecting the people. You know, I prefer less government, but not in the way that it's pushed, like comes from the right. My issue is that if it was constitutional, it would be less naturally. But before we even got there, if there was no corruption and waste, that would shrink government immensely and would certainly work better for the people. Because it is the corruption that in both privately and government, the marriage that's going on, that is insane in my mind, and how everybody is just being tossed away. Like the poor, the you know, minorities, the inner cities are just being destroyed by this attitude of, well, capitalism must rule, and money in politics is okay because money is speech. And I'm like, no. Because it's not a fair society. So I get that, and I wanted to get some more of your take on that.
Well, I completely agree with you. And I'm at this point, it's 10 o'clock, and I'm going to have to jump off this call because I've got to go.
Oh, yes.
I
see that too. We're doing so well. I've only got a half hour left on the show. We're rolling along. And
I have
a candidate on, I like it.
I completely understand, but if I could, I'd love to come back on at another time. And I've enjoyed this conversation that we've had. But if I could, real quick, just direct everybody to my campaign website, which is okay.
Yeah.
The campaign website is Robbie Wells, RobbieWells2016.com. Please go on and check out. The campaign website, and we sure would like to have your support. We are a grassroots organization, so any financial support that you can help us with, we sure would like that. We are going to be here in Atlanta this coming week, and then I'll be shooting back over to South Carolina. We've got some television commercials that are about to start airing in the state of South Carolina, which is an early primary. But we look forward to seeing each and every one of you out here on the road. May God bless each and every one of you. May God bless these United States.
I appreciate you being on the show, Robbie Wells, and enjoy your day. I know you're off to a church meeting this morning where you're speaking, and absolutely we'll have you back on the show. And you be well, and God bless you as well.
God bless. Bye-bye.
I rather enjoyed that conversation, actually. A lot of ground covered, of course. That's the main thing. It's always good to find out where candidates stand, particularly a presidential candidate. You know, yes, he is a long shot. Does that matter? No, it does not. You know, from where I'm sitting, they're all long shots. If you want to go with the stance of what the media is telling us. Anybody that's not the royalty of Bush and Clinton is a long shot, you know. And I'm sorry, we have 200 million people that can vote in anybody that we think is the best candidate, and we should kind of continue that and make sure that the best candidate is elected. And it doesn't matter what party they're in; doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what party you're in. It really, let's vet these candidates and hold them accountable and pick the best one. That's the best thing that we can do for our world. Greg, you're funny. you really are funny. You got to let people say what they want to say, Greg. So I didn't get to do, because of the wonderful glitches of Blog Talk Radio. Boy, I'm going to be talking to them this week about some technical stuff. But I want to get into some of the current events quickly in my last half hour. There's some things going on. Everybody knows I'm covering particularly, the first thing I want to discuss is the Tyler character felony murder trial in Wichita and Sedgwick County, Kansas. Kansas is getting on the radar like Texas is. It is amazing. But, you know, just to update everybody on that issue, in the state of Kansas, Tyler Carrick is being prosecuted for felony murder. And he was, in fact, a victim of a robbery. Now, under Kansas law, the day that the incident happened, and what happened was Tyler was at a train station, at a train stop, watching a train go by, and a high school classmate he happened to run into, named Lorenzo Spires, and Spires got to talking to him about marijuana and asked him if he knew anybody that might be able to get him some marijuana, and he said he might, and he could make a call for him. So when Lorenzo put Kyler's cell phone number in his cell phone, instead of putting Lorenzo's name in, typing in his name for the help, for the phone number, he typed in the word "hit" because Spires was conspiring to rob and kill the people involved in getting him the marijuana that he was looking for. So Tyler made a phone call to a friend and asked him if he might know somebody who could get some marijuana, and that person then contacted somebody else who sold marijuana. And then Lorenzo, who is a member of a gang that Tyler doesn't know about, contacts his buddies, and they go about setting these people up for a robbery. Now, at the time, there was no law that said that this would be a predicate situation for felony murder for Kyler because of his involvement in introducing people to buy marijuana. That would happen later, after the incident. These people go to the house of the guy who Kyler knew, and the guy who's selling the marijuana goes to the house, and within a minute of the people being there, they open fire. They shoot Kyler twice, once in the leg and once in the stomach. They kill Ronald Betts, who was the person who was selling the marijuana. Two of these guys have received reduced sentences. The two of the killers have received reduced sentences to testify against the other guys. Now, this incident happens. We have ex post facto law in this country. What that means is that if I do something today that is not a crime, and they write a law that says it is a crime tomorrow, I can't be prosecuted for the crime because it happened today. Well, that's what Kansas did with this predicate felony murder statute. They made selling marijuana an inherently dangerous crime after this event. And then the prosecuting attorney filed an inherently dangerous crime felony murder charge against Kyler Carricker for his role in being shot and setting up these guys to meet somebody who could buy marijuana. Basically, what happened is these gang members duped this guy, and they were looking for people to rob and to kill because they're axes. They actually testified that they had no intention of buying anything ever, that they went there strictly to rob them and shoot them, kill them, however you want to put it. But that's what they said in previous hearings. Well, Kyler's trial is happening right now, and there's the human rights organization, Human Solution International. The attorney for that organization actually sent a letter requesting that the prosecution be dropped. There are protests going outside of the courtroom. And the other interesting tidbit is that Kyler's mother ran for governor in the state of Kansas. Actually received 37% of the vote on the Republican ticket in the Republican primary against the present genius governor that is in Kansas. It's a piece of work. So there's a lot of that going on, and without a doubt, when I did the show on this last week, actually on Saturday, covering for Politics Done Right, I had the attorney of record for the defense on, Sarah Swain, and she was even talking about that. There's no doubt in her mind that one of the reasons why this prosecution is happening, to the degree that it is because of who Kyler's mother is. And of course, Wichita, Kansas is the home of the Koch brothers. And so there's a lot of things going on, but the main thing that's going on here is a young man's life is in the balance who was shot as I mentioned twice, once in the stomach and once in the abdomen. He was actually talked to by the police while he was fresh out of surgery and full of painkillers, and they're trying to say that his statements were inconsistent. Of course, he never stated really anything other than that he was shot, and he didn't have an arm, he wasn't armed, and he didn't shoot anybody, and all of his statements have been considered true by the police. He didn't do anything other than get shot, but he is facing mandatory 20 years if convicted. He'd probably get life if convicted. And the judge in the case has decided not to let anybody into the courtroom that is wearing any shirts or buttons that support Tyler. The courtroom is packed with supporters. They also have denied press credentials to anybody who has written articles in favor of Tyler. And then, of course, the press, the regular press, is not really covering this the way it should be. So I just wanted to let everybody know what's going on. They finished the first week of trial. The last thing that happened on Friday was that the defense adopted a prosecution witness, a woman that lived in the house where the murders happened, brought her back in and put her under direct examination on Friday. I'm fixing to get an update on that later on today. The defense case in chief will be starting this week. My guess is no later than Tuesday. Don't hold me to that. I'm not actually sitting in the courtroom, so I could be wrong, but certainly sometime this week of the case, the defense case in chief will be starting, and then we'll see how fast it goes to the jury. There is a protest that's going to go on outside the courthouse Monday morning, 11, I believe it is, Central Time. So for all the listeners that are in the Kansas area listening to my show, I know a lot of you have been lately. I just wanted to give a shout-out, and anybody who wants to go out there and support. You know, I've been writing about it, and, you know, from a standpoint of a journalist, my approach is to be non-biased, and I have been from the standpoint of facts. But I'm furious at the state of Kansas and for the local prosecutor for doing this. You know, one of the things that I've discussed a lot recently with my conversations with his attorney, Sarah Swain, who's a marvelous attorney, is the lack of prosecutors in this country, and judges for that matter, but prosecutors particularly, and honoring their oath and seeking justice. Now, a lot, you know, that's a big deal if you think about it. They are supposed to be advocates for justice. Now, the justice that they're seeking, of course, are for the victims and for the state, but it's justice all the same. And this prosecution is not about justice at all. I mean, you know, if you're going to, first of all, the fact that they are charging him with something that didn't exist when the crime happened is absolutely an ex post facto violation, in my view, and I'm hoping that's the first reason why it would get thrown out if, in fact, he gets convicted. Now, I'm hoping he doesn't get convicted. He's, like I said, he's got a very good attorney, and I'm certain that there's blood on the floor in that courtroom with as hard as an attorney has been known to fight for their clients, for her clients, and her success rate. But all the same, prosecutors are supposed to be about justice, and certainly what they're doing here is not justice. There was never any reasonable plea bargain offered in this case to avoid all of this. You know, the putting a young man in jail for his role in introducing somebody who also had to put in another person to buy marijuana. Marijuana people, you know, for life is absurd. So, shout out to everybody out in Kansas who is protesting, and a shout out to Tyler Carricker, and a shout out to his family. Best wishes to you this week. I know it is a really, really tense time, and I wish you all the best. Friday, an interesting thing happened on the floor of the United States Senate. Presidential candidate, Republican Ted Cruz, got on the floor of the Senate and called the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell a liar. Now, I think Mitch McConnell is a liar. I think Mitch McConnell is a very, very bad representative of the people in this country. So, in that regard, Ted Cruz said something that I'm really happy he said. The reason I bring it up more than anything else, a couple of reasons I bring it up more than anything else, is because Ted did something that is never done on the Senate floor, and that is essentially disrespecting another member of the Senate in the way that he did. Now, there's a lot of things that are said on the Senate floor, but there is a certain etiquette that is done that Ted Cruz crossed. Now, I'm not saying I disagree with him crossing it or not. I actually think that what he did is needed more. I'm sure if I was a United States Senate in the last 20 years, United States Senator in the last 20 years, there would be I mentioned blood on the floor in the court. There'd be a lot of blood on the floor in the Senate because I would be calling out a lot of people on the shenanigans that they're doing, and I would like to see more of that all the time. But calling your Senate Majority Leader or calling any other senator literally a liar, that's the word he used, liar, is very, very unique, and it just doesn't happen. So I invite everybody to listen to what Ted Cruz had to say. It's too long to play on this show. We only have about 14 minutes left. But he also, the issue was about the import-export bank, which is something that we all should realize about. Actually, on this particular issue, Ted is dead on right. And it's interesting from the standpoint of ideologies and party affiliations. But what is considered the most conservative parts, and I just don't get that. But there's different types of conservatism that is represented in our Congress. I don't even know. Just like there's different types of progressive liberalism that's represented in our Congress. And again, I sorting through it is a nightmare. You know, you have the religious zealots as one part of conservatism. You have the liberty people in the Republican Party that are another part of conservatism. And this particular part that I'm talking about is the Liberty part that is against the Import-Export Bank, and it is the right place to be. And what's interesting about what Cruz did is he actually praised Bernie Sanders, who voted the same way he did. And I've said this many times, that when it comes to Bernie Sanders and his voting record, I really have a high respect for his voting record when it comes to constitutional issues. The Import-Export Bank is absolutely a constitutional issue. And it's absolutely money in politics. The Democrats and the Republicans that support this agency support money in politics and corporate subsidies and corporate bailouts. But that's what the Import-Export is about. So anyway, Ted Cruz was involved in a discussion with Mitch McConnell, and he was assured that the vote wasn't going to happen. And then Mitch McConnell, before he left the Senate floor, and of course he wasn't there when this happened, when he left the Senate floor, he announced the vote, and Ted went off on it. And he should have. And I was really happy to see that. But I also mentioned it because it's something that seems to be happening in this election cycle a little bit more than usual. And considering that we have social media and everything is so interconnected, that, you know, maybe that's part of it too, but candidates and party members are calling out each other heavily. Now, you know, I'm sure your initial reaction is thinking about Donald Trump, because of course he's been doing it on a regular basis. And when he attacked John McCain the way he did, it wasn't right to question his heroism. No way. But another is, you know, and I have no regard for Donald Trump, but let's try and be objective here for a minute and look at what he was saying along with that. One of the issues that he was talking about was the low regard that John McCain's voting record has in helping our veterans. And that is absolutely true. You know, John McCain has a horrible record in helping veterans. And of course, that, and Donald Trump has been talking about that on his bully pulpit. It's a big one. Talking about the lack of care and help and all the bad things that are happening with our veterans. And of course, this is something that's been going on since the Vietnam war, when the veterans returned from the Vietnam War, the way that they were treated was horrid, both by society and by our government. And that trend has pretty much been consistent. It's changed, you know, like now it's PTSD, for example. But when it comes to the health of our veteran population, it is ridiculous. So many homeless, so many destitute, so many mentally ill, and none of them getting help. You know, the majority of them not getting help. What's happening? And of course, I didn't even mention them medically. Just medically. Forget mentally for a second. Medically, they're not being helped properly either. And so for all of Donald Trump's craziness, that issue is very, very important in our society, and that was one of the reasons why I raised that. And then, of course, Martin O'Malley, of all the candidates on the Democratic ticket, with the exception of Robbie Wells, who was just on, for example, Martin O'Malley is also calling out issues and calling out, has been raising awareness about Hillary Clinton's, for example, Hillary Clinton's association with big money. And yeah, it's an election cycle and stuff like that, so some of that goes on. But it seems to me like there's a lot more going on and a lot more fractured parts of the parties that are developing. Certainly it's happening on the right, and that's easy considering that they have 814 candidates. There's a lot of fraction there, but a lot of fractures there, rather. But the Democratic Party has less. You know, they have, well, mainstream media says they have 5. They actually have 8, I believe it is. So, and we're gonna see that, but it feels different to me. It just looks a little different. I just wanted to point that out because I think that we're gonna see some glaring examples of issues that come out. Like you could take the attack by Trump about the veterans, and you could put that with the attack by Cruz with the Import-Export Bank, for example, particularly if you're not a Republican. And you could take those two issues and love them to death and put them on a platform of your own, into what would be your ideal candidate, you know, and hope that these issues are covered. It's one of the reasons why I covered issues the way I did with Robbie Wells is part of that was me personally, and part of that was just stuff that you hear. But if you go through the line, you know, one after the other, it gives you an idea of where everybody stands and how they'll match yourself. And, you know, for me, it's really important to vet everybody. And right now I have no one. You know, from me standpoint, I am not endorsing anyone as of yet. I found major buzz. You know, you talk about, front, you know, Donald Trump is the front runner. And that also to me is absurd. You know, the last time we had an election cycle, everybody became, the only person that wasn't ever a front runner for the Republican Party was Ron Paul. And he was the one that was the biggest delegate vote getter outside of Mitt Romney through the whole thing. That got the shaft at the Republican National Convention. So I hate polls. I understand the science, but I think the polls are just meant to distract us. And I can't stand them. I don't ever listen to them, give them credence. But that's what they're trying to sell us right now. You know, Donald Trump. Well, I don't even think Donald Trump is going to be around by the turn of the year. You know, that's just my opinion. It's a sideshow. And a continued sideshow, and with our election cycle so long, we can withstand it because, you know, and I think part of it is to get us tired of it, and let's not be tired of it. We got a lot going on. Oh, Greg, Trump is a narcissistic clown. Stop that. Now, Greg, that's not very civil. Who deserves no credit for anything. He is the quintessential clock that might be right twice a day. Well, if a clock is right twice a day, Greg, that means it should be told. I can look up and say, hey, the clock is right at 3:30. Well, if Donald Trump is right on something, he needs to, I don't care who's right on something. If they're right on it, it can be told that they're right on it. I have a caller here from Area Code 316. I think I know who that is. Who do I have on the line from Kansas? Tell me.
It's Jennifer Wynn.
Jennifer! I knew it was you. Jennifer, I have 6 minutes. Tell me how you're doing. Tell me how Kyla's doing, and tell me how the trial's going.
Well, we're doing well. The trial is, we have one of the gang members that will be cross-examined by Sarah on Monday, who has already testified that he came to rob and never intended to purchase anything. So we've gotten that far. But I think the trial is going well. I think Sarah's doing a great job. And I think that people are sitting on the jury after they heard Lorenzo Spires on Friday testify that he came to rob. I think a couple of the juries were kind of just baffled at why we were there. So I would say that it's going good. If common sense prevails, we will walk away and my son will be free and we can move on and fight the rest of the country and the rest of the unjust laws, hopefully eventually take over our country and really restore freedom.
Yeah, you know, and of course, thank you for dropping by. I wanted to make sure, I don't know if you heard it a little earlier, I was giving an update on the trial. I wanted to make sure everybody knew what was going on. I want to keep doing that until the trial is over and hopefully over for good.
Right.
Sometime here in the next week, of course. And certainly the protesting and the support that you've been receiving has been wonderful. I've seen your videos. Anybody who wants to go to Jennifer Wynn for Kansas on Facebook, she gives video updates throughout the week of what's been going on. It's very important. A whole bunch of people are involved, the Human Solution International that I mentioned earlier. Certainly, they are doing updates and press releases, and they have people who are on the ground in Kansas to travel for the event. And I know you're appreciative of the support that you've gotten, and they have an event coming up Monday you can talk about briefly.
Yeah, they're holding an event on Monday at 11 o'clock. And, you know, again, this is about the unjustness. This is about a system that is corrupt and is affecting millions of lives. We're locking up innocent people that have no victim, and that's got to stop. So Monday is truly a stand, not just for Kyler, but it's a stand against our government that is harming us. And I'm expecting a huge turnout. The support has been overwhelming. Some days it's even hard for me just to keep up the updates. But you know, it is truly a travesty. And I can't imagine where we are, the trauma we've endured, the stress, the pressure, the depression, the fear, everything that we have endured. I can't imagine that millions of people have gone through what we're living. And it's just almost impossible for my mind to grasp that. But we are Monday. We're going to let them know. We're going to let them know we're here. We're going to let them know we're watching. And it's no longer acceptable. And people across the nation, Bobby, are coming out in support. People in other countries are coming out in support.
They are.
Prosecutors. I mean, I've had prosecutors, one particular from Chicago, that says, "What the hell are they doing?" And I said, "Welcome to
Kansas." Isn't that
Kansas.
The truth? It's crazy. That's right. Kansas is lost its mind. We all know that. Jennifer, I wish I had more time. The show's going to end in 2 minutes, but I'm so happy that you stopped by. And certainly I'll be in touch with you tomorrow and paying attention to what's going on and make sure that the Coffee Party is aware of all of the trial events. And we wish Kyler and you very, very well. And go
thank
get them.
Bobby.
And we'll be thinking about
it. I will. Okay, thanks, Bobby. Have a great day. And thanks for all your awareness that you're helping to wake up our country. I am so proud of you.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. And all right, so here we are. Last minute, just wanted to say, pay attention out there, everybody. Be safe. Have a fantastic week. And yeah, Greg, I saw what you were saying. I'm chuckling inside myself. You make me chuckle. This is a good thing. And I understand your point. I do. I really do. Look forward to seeing you back here next week, 8:30. I take liberty with my coffee. Bobby Rodriguez.